For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable.
That's right.
For the record, you ain't trying to grow, then it's done for you.
That's right.
For the record, lab on me going all the way.
All the way.
For the record, ain't trying to link, no time to waste.
Stop calling.
For the record. For the record. For the record. For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable.
That's right.
Yes, the clink, the clink, the clink. Real Stories of Redemption, Season 7. I want to just take a quick moment and thank every one of you amazing listeners out there. It is phenomenal, the response we're having, the support that you've been giving for each season and for every story that we share. Today, we have another wonderful guest, someone that you may not be familiar with, and many of you will. He is a local Gold Coast man, born and bred. He is somebody that is a very inspiring human who puts a lot back into the community. He's also a champion in his own right. He's a pro surfer. He's a coach. He's a dad. And his name is Jay Phillips. Jay, welcome to the Clink, Stories of Redemption, mate. This is really long overdue.
Mate, thanks for having me, Brent. This is, long overdue.
It's a little bit different. Okay, season seven, I'm just going to lay it on the line. So many guests in the initial seasons came in and were doing a lot of people with stories of redemption through, being in jail or, going through terrible traumas in their life. And nothing's changed. The Clink won't ever change. That's our platform. That's what we do. But I've wanted to bring in some different angles of redemption, especially in season seven. I think, having someone like yourself, a professional athlete, as I said, a mentor, a coach, an amazing father. Jay, you grew up in a very small little coastal town on the top end of the New South Wales border and Queensland border called Finglehead.
Yeah, Finglehead is a home for me and the Phillips family generation. They'd been there for a number of years since the early 60s. They bought a place on the corner and turned it into the Fingal Phillips General Store. It was a store that was basically your store that, like every place you'd go to nowadays, like Kmart and your Targets and that, but it was just a home store.
Your little go-to. Takeaway, dairies, classified as little corner shop. I take it one of those places where you knew everyone and everyone knew you, especially if it was, and I believe it was your nan, wasn't it?
Yeah, my grandmother and my grandfather. See, my grandfather went on to making a lot of, he established himself really quite well in the industry with oysters, and they right. Oyster farms down in Brunswick, and they used to do runs to Brisbane, to Ballina, and they're quite famous for those type of things from the rivers. And look, that, and then went on to like a bit of a petrol station, and it was called Marine Outboards as well. My grandmother was the first taxi lady in the Tweed.
Really?
She was, they're both hard workers. And in the end, I didn't really know much of all about that. I'm just kind of brainstorming much of it now and rethinking on it all. But, Fingal was a tight knit place.
So Jay, with a name like yours in the Fingal area, you definitely were very well known and obviously had to live up to that name, I guess. Having the uncles, the father, and the community knowing who you were would have expected, this wonderful young man to grow up and, become this great surfer living on the coast there. And, mate, talk to us about how it was growing up for you, because it wasn't easy and it definitely wasn't something that I think a lot of people truly know until now, was it?
Yeah, no, it wasn't. But, growing up, when I first was born, my dad, grew up in a beautiful neighborhood at Fingal, and, he got to that age of when he was 21, he was a surfer and started a job at the Bakers at Kingscliff, went on to meet Russ Pitchers, which is a great surfer, Craig Pitchers' old man, Simon and Joel Pitchers, the old man, and then was great friends with Wayne Sands, whose parents owned the bakery in Kingscliff. And then they were great surf buddies, dominated the areas from Kingscliff right through Fingal and that. And then, you know, Dad got drafted when he was 21 to go to the army. And
oh, wow.
They trained in southeast Queensland. But for
was
him
this around the Vietnam War, around the Vietnam War time, the 70s? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So he got drafted in to do the training and everything. And then he didn't end up going there because he ended up supplying the whole southeast Queensland with marijuana.
Oh, right.
And then, yeah, that's how he got out of going to Vietnam.
Well, so he actually got caught selling basically a lot of marijuana.
He supplied the whole southeast Queensland army with it. And that's how he got out of going there. Yeah, he was a real good dope grower. After that, growing up, I mean, I used to just borrow my dad's board. I've actually started surfing, Brent. I started surfing in the boat harbour at Fingal. And I used to I used to run around one side, wait for the howling winds to kick up, and then I'd run and jump on my board and stay on the board right to the other side.
Wow.
And then run around the other side again, do it again all day. And then it went from there to learning in the shore breaks. Because it was basically right around when there was not many people were surfing with leg ropes. So then I'd wait on the beach, waiting for the other people to fall off, grab their board, steal their board for a bit and catch some waves. I just started loving surfing. And then a friend of mine, Dean Bevan and Shane Bevan, moved to Fingal. And then that's when it really kicked off. I wanted to be a surfer then, and they pushed me into it. But then my father introduced me to Greenmount. And, mate, Greenmount was just a wave like no one. It was the perfect grommet wave. It was just running along the rocks. It got so good. I can't believe my luck. And then this wave formed up inside the Tweed River. They call it Dopey's. It was this perfect little right-hander, but it was breaking out further. And I grew my surfing up on there.
But how old were you, Jay, when you became a member of the Surfboard Riders Club?
Yeah, I first joined the Board Riders Club, but I was pretty late onto it too. I joined it when I was 12 years old. It was a real radical time then. You had to have two nominations from two particular surfers in the club that would nominate you in. So you go out the door. Yeah, you go out the door and they nominate you in. And then you come in, you got to get on the stand and go, fucking snapper.
Mate, this is like getting your colours in a fucking club. You literally got to get 100% vote.
Yeah.
You come in and if you're lucky enough to not get touched up and you're given your colours and five, mate, then you got to go, ooh, rah, 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 and everyone has a drink. Like, so it was no different.
Yeah, so I was 12 and then all I wanted to do was just be uptown. But then my first board riders came around. I made the final and I dropped in on Dean and he's turned at the judges and going, what's he doing?
What's going on?
I didn't
on
know.
Here.
Yeah, yeah. And then I didn't know. And I didn't go back. I didn't go back. And then at the end of the year, they brought me a fifth place trophy and said, you just got fifth place. First trophy ever. It was a huge one. And I went, I'm going back. But then I just kept wanting to go back to Greenmount, going up to town, always surfing, because that's where I was going to get better at my surfing.
Yeah.
Within a year and a half, I had Rabbit turning up at my door with a contract off Billabong saying, I want to sponsor your son.
So, Rabbit, we're talking about a world champion here. He's in, you know, surfing folklore. Rabbit Bartholomew, whom just a wonderful, wonderful man. For those that don't know too much about the surfing industry, you know, Jay's a part of the royalty of Australian surfing and, you know, up there with the likes of Mick Fanning, Joel Parkinson, Dean Morrison, and so many more that have come out of this small part of Australia, these coastal towns. The thing is, and this is important to Jay's story, Jay was always going to be, you know, one of those guys to be on the world tour. And Jay, I mean, look, you were competing, you started to come into, you know, your youth and people turning heads at you saying, You know, Billabong was huge back then, and all of a sudden you've got somebody like Rabbit Bartholomew. What was he, 70? What year was he the world champion?
77 or 78, I think.
So he's acknowledged that there's talent here. You know, you've got one of the biggest, well, it was the biggest surf brand in Australia back then, Billabong. It was the core of surfing. And you've been offered a contract. What was that like?
It was so weird. It was like, you know, Rabbit turning up with a contract saying to my dad's going, we want to sponsor your son. And he goes, what? Is he that fucking good? It's like, yes, he really is. And then, you know, went on to, after that, just started competing for the club a lot. And I love that. I love that camaraderie around me, that, you know, having my team around me. It was a lot of pressure, like always a lot of pressure. And they put me in those pressure situations to go out there and win. And I went and won for the club. Yeah. And that's, if I had that around me when I traveled around the world, I would have fucking done so much better. I just, when I was out there in the world, I got lost in the world. But, you know, I met some of the best surfers, best friends in the world around me. And they were so, like, welcoming me into their house and taking me in as their brother. And it was like, but it was that I was kind of losing. I didn't have that camaraderie, that feeling of my friends around me from home.
They support
would point me into the right direction.
Yeah.
But getting that Billabong sponsor, mate, it was the biggest feeling, best feeling of my life. And I knew there was something there with my surfing.
You talk about that support network, and I'm going to go deep with you on this because this is something that, you know, I think it we just knock it on the head and respectfully bring it up. And Jay, you had this opportunity. Home wasn't the greatest. Your dad was doing his best. You know, your world was the water, not so much school. So, you know, I guess you're a bit of a rogue young person with opportunities knocking at your door. Then something absolutely tragic happened to your dad.
Yeah. Look, Brent, I just went through, after getting sponsored, I just took things for granted. You know, I had everything at my feet, and I never realized it, how good I had it. And then, you know, I didn't have my mother around me. I was a little depressed at some point. So I didn't, you know, have my father around me as much competing. I was 16 years old. There was an event coming up over the weekend. It was called the Queensland Titles. And I was competing in the juniors and opens that same weekend. And I was the first kind of junior to surf in the opens as well. And I had, there was just at that time, there was a lot of movement going on in Fingal with property developments, like Ocean Blue was coming and getting involved, wanting to build a marina plus a resort around the quarry there at Fingal. And my father was quite, you know, he was kind of pushing for it, and he really wanted to create jobs for a lot of the people that live there. And it was just it was an evening. I was competing. It was an evening. There was a meeting about it all up at Greenmount Surf Club. And, you know, I guess, I know, I get a lot of people tell me other things of what happened. And, you know, my dad's best mates were there. Dad's best mates were there that afternoon. And, you know, I got told, a lot of them got death threats of what happened. They moved town. I've never seen them ever again.
This was very very full on at that period, and we're talking what the 80s was it?
Yeah, it was.
What was the year?
16. So it would have been 30 years ago.
Okay,
30 years ago. So that's early 90s.
Early 90s, and a lot of community backlash.
Yeah.
That didn't want this to happen.
And
obviously they were against those whom were for it. Is that right?
Mm.
Your dad was supportive of progression and moving forward within the community and providing, you know, jobs and so on. Okay.
Yeah. And then I guess, like all places, Dad had a few drinks. Everyone got a little heated. And I don't know, he might have got told to leave. And don't know if it was a sucker punch or a push or something like that, but he fell back, hit the back of his head. And he told my grandmother that he didn't want to have my family looking after him. So he probably would have come back scrambled like a vegetable. And it's hard for me. I've never really got this off my chest. And this is the best way to get it off my chest, talking to you, bro, because you're my brother. And
I'm so proud of you to take this, because I know how hard this one's going to be. And yeah. your dad was hit and put into a coma. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, I just have all these different stories of other people that were there, now not there. Get these other different people telling me what happened, and you know, I don't want to point the fingers at anyone, but I see that guy around a fair bit, and he's all now God believer and all this kind of stuff, and it's like it hurts me when he's telling me this shit when I see him. And but this, you know, that same weekend, the Queensland title was on, and Tommy Peterson actually came up to me and said, go win the fucking contest. Go win it. And I won both of them that weekend. And I dedicated that one to my dad.
Was it that weekend, Jay, that you had to make the decision for your dad
to turn the life support off? Yeah.
You're a young man, 16 years of age. You're little bit lost as it was, you know, not really knowing where your place was. You knew that there are people out there that wanted you to represent their brands, you know, so on the biggest stages there was, but it wasn't what you needed as such. You needed that camaraderie, that love, that care, that place to call home, not that lounge, but your home, you know. You're searching for that, and then your dad is put in a situation where he's put into a coma, and you're a young man that has to turn that life support off. Mm. We've never, ever had this conversation. I've sort of always been very gentle around it. But what was that like, Jay?
Well, right then I didn't really have, after that, I didn't have any. My grandfather passed away when I was at a young age, when I was like 10, and then my father, and then I didn't have really anyone around me except for like my board riders club, like Rabbit and Bruce Lee and a few others around the neighborhood that were kind of like ringing me up and asking me how am I going and all that all the time. And then, you know, I'd get emotional a lot of time, and I just felt like I didn't really want to be around in this world a lot of time, because all I was thinking of how good I would be as a surfer and what I wanted to do to achieve for my dad. And I did. I went on to, I was number one junior in Australia. I started, you know, competing at the QS rank, and getting a good ranking. And
just for those that don't know, the QS was the qualifying series in Australia, which then went around the world. The likes of, you know, two-time world champion Mick Fanning, Kelly Slater, 10-time, is he 10 or 11? Whichever way, he's a phenomenal. he's Joel Parkinson. Yeah. These world champions looked up to Jay. These world champions used to sit there and idolize, and still do, you know, Jay Phillips. And everybody wanted to be Jay Phillips. And Jay Phillips just had this, you know, beautiful talent with this terrible, terrible trauma and pain and anguish around him.
Yeah, you know, look, that's, you know, I had everything at my feet with surfing. I just thought, this is the best thing in my life. I was working with the best shaper in the world, Darren Hanley at the time. You know, my sponsor was really looking after me, Billabong. I then went on to like, you know, had some other great sponsors, but then I went on to around the world competing. I just, as what I was saying a little bit earlier, I just wanted that camaraderie of my own people around me to make, to drive me forward a little bit more. Cause I felt a little bit, every time I went somewhere, I was like a little lost in the world, and I was always competing, like felt like against myself too much. And then when I was away, I'd get emotional. I'd be always like going, this is the place where I wanted to go with Dad when I was younger, and I'd be crying, I'd be carrying on, and I'd lose myself and smoking heaps of weed and doing all sorts of other different drugs and losing myself. And then, you know, that kind of, you know, it got around pretty quick after that. And then, you know, when I was, 21, 22, I'd lost that sponsorship with Billabong. And then I just saw the end of it then. I just went, I don't want to be around anymore. I just was I wanted to take my life so much then too. Like, because I was in a dark place, man. I was like, before surf, after surf, lunch. Fuck, just, I was smoking that much fucking weed. It was just silly. It was burning my mind.
Do you think, Jay, that it was more, and we talk about this a lot with our guests, traumas and stuff like that, and, you know, wearing a mask and basically suppressing that emotion. I mean, you had no one to turn to. I guess the water was your out. You always had time for everybody else, and you still do today. And you know, that's just, that's who you are. You're a young man that's totally got all the opportunities to be the best in the world. Like, people knew that you would have been and could have been a world champion, but no one was able to look at the back end of it and realize how can we get around him to give Jay Phillips that opportunity. They just, if I can put this bluntly, to me, you just got used and abused.
Yeah, I was.
How did things go for you once you realized that there was a problem and you know, like the drugs were a problem, the alcohol?
Through the 90s was a different pro surfing scene, you know, like even at any WQS or any huge event, there was a lot going on. There was like people were getting really out of it before events and, you know, and so if you... I tell you, if you'd, I don't want to name anyone, but there's like some surfers in there that have been just living radical people, you know, and this, the 90s was different. And it just showed a little bit of that onto the WSL with everyone getting jungle fever in G-Land, just not like long ago, where everyone's going really next level, a bit rowdy and stuff. You can see they were having, that was the 90s, and everyone was just running them up, probably waking up hungover, just trying to surf a heat. And then, you know, like that, the board riders saved me and I just wanted to be at the top with them. Look, I did give back a lot and I get that great feeling, Brent, when I do give back more than I take. And I just love being on now running that board riders club and pushing in the right direction and making sure that our junior development club is really pushing forward with the likes of great little surfers coming up through. I just want to, everything today is, you have to be a good role model now and you can't really show yourself as just a reckless person as we did. We wouldn't have got, you know, fuck, if the social media was around when we were younger, shit, I wouldn't have had anything.
Get
you know?
It.
I would have lost my sponsor real quick.
What company would have taken on anybody? I mean, I'm not going to name names, but I've had, I'll call it the honour because I was a part of a lot of what Jay's talking about a little bit later, but still right in the thick of when things were, you know, in that scene full on. You know, it was, you just were bending and you know, wherever there was lines of coke, pills, I mean, even some surfers hit the heroin. It was crazy. And as you know, it's not something we're going to sit here and name names, but people would be surprised at whom, you know, was right involved. But it was a scene back then that it was cool to be. And I think that's the thing that, you know, I always found hard with you is you're at the center of that cool time. And, you know, you were the king of the party sort of thing, able to kick it on with whoever and, you know, like punch the bongs, drink the piss, party, have a hell. You were a loose cannon, but so was everybody else. It was the thing. But it seemed to be that everybody started to just move in a different direction and here you were on your own.
I kind of missed the boat with it, you know. I think when Taj Burrow started coming into it, you know, Mick, Joel and Dean, they came in at the right time with the money side of things.
Yeah, right.
Like we were still doing it, you know, but no one was paying for it. I just loved surfing so much in the end. I didn't care what way I was living. You know, I just wanted to be still in the water. It was what I loved doing. And, you know, when I was there with no sponsors in the end, I was like, fuck, what am I going to be doing now? I looked it in the side of my fridge and went, all I've got is a fucking tomato in there and some bread. I was like, I hate fucking tomatoes. What am I going to eat?
So this was just a straight out reality check. This was like whack, smack in the head. This is fucking life.
That's it. Like, and then all of a sudden, oh, I get a sponsor from Japan. Oh, I got a sponsor from, you know, an American brand. And they didn't care about competing. They just wanted me to be a free surfer. They just wanted me to go over to America for 3 months. They wanted me to go to Hawaii. They just didn't care about the competing side. But deep down, I wanted to compete. I really wanted to. I wanted to make
that
comeback.
That was your passion. Yeah.
Yeah. And I tried to make that comeback one time and they gave me the money and I was allowed to do everything I wanted. I got all the way to France. Mate of mine said, I can't be there until tomorrow. You know what I did? I left my fucking surfboards there, left my luggage, I went fucking home. I said, I'm done. I left
really?
It all at the
just
fucking airport.
Just there and then?
Yeah.
Just walked just away went, from it all?
Yeah, done. I got home. It was right around when I thought I was ready to. Like,
yeah.
And then after that, a few more years down the track, you know, I met my wife, Kashalia Phillips, now Kashalia Welsh. And, yeah, it was funny. Like, we had this year 10 formal back at my place after party at my house and Dad would let it go and he had like a keg for us, passion pop, and it was all like a bongophone going on upstairs and it was like, and that's when Charles, she just came from New Zealand, came over and said, oh, yeah, and her Dad was quite fond of her and he's like, mate, I think you should be going for her. And, yeah, then I think 10 years went down the track and I, we got married and a couple
got
of beautiful kids
again.
And, yeah, and then I think, yeah, we went to, we went to America when my Savannah was.
You did.
Yeah,
yes, you did.
America.
You went to Chase the Dreams and
Chase
I remember,
the Dream.
I remember sitting there with my wife, your wife's sister.
Oh, yeah. And then, yeah,
and
that's the
we were there
connection.
Like just, yes, he's going to get, he got through a heat, he got through another heat. And, it was a very, an amazing opportunity to come back. I think, you know, to see the joy that it was on your face. But at the same time, I don't feel that you truly felt that you had fulfilled what you wanted to do.
Yeah. That's why I went back to America. I wanted to do a few events there, a few of their local ones, at Newport, and one in Santa Cruz, and got a semi-final there. And then after that, we were flying off down to San Diego for this trade show because I just lost my sponsor from Ezekiel at that point. It was a real hard time then too. I think it was like when the whole world crashed with sponsorship money and everything like that, and they weren't paying anyone anymore. The financial side of things was just heartbreaking. And I got all the way to San Diego for this trade show to see if they'd let me in to walk around because I wanted to show Charles around. Yeah. And they just went, no, we can't let you in. And that's when I went, fuck, Jay Phillips is dead in the surfing industry. And I went, that's it. I'm a nobody now.
Guys, I want you to listen to what Jay just said there. Jay Phillips is dead. Because this has so much relevance to the back end of our interview today, and it makes sense what you just said then. And we've never gone this deep into that part of your life. Hearing you just say that must have been so hard once again to realize that, you know, the dream's over.
Yeah, well, a good friend of mine, Todd Proctor, that was shaping my surfboards at the time, took me in over there, took our family in, and. And we had a wonderful time with him. He tried to help me as much as he could to try and get other sponsors to get me on board again. And, I just walked away from the States a bit heartbroken. And I got to meet some great people over there. And they took me in like Brody Jenner and Brandon Jenner and all those guys, and Pascal Stansfield. A lot of the crew from Malibu took me in. They really took me and loved me. And, showed my wife around and my child. And that's when it actually came around with, this is a good one because Jason Repizar, he was another one that took me in as well. And I was there at Venice at the Starbucks, Brent. And I'm going, is that fucking Robert Trujillo? And he goes, yeah, that's Robert. And he comes up and he goes, hey, Repo, what up there? What up there, bro?
I just come straight out. Now, we're talking about the bass guitarist out of one of the biggest bands back then, which was Suicidal Tendencies, wasn't it? That was like a punky thrash. That's, yeah.
Yeah, he went on to play for Ozzy Osbourne as well, and Black Label
and
Society.
And he's known, he's very well known as Metallica's, the biggest band, rock band in the world, whom you've, let's get right into this stage of Jay Phillips' life, because you're not so dead here, you're well and truly alive again, aren't you?
Yeah, that's just brought my spirits up again. It was like, I told my mate, I was like, Jason, Repo, if they ever come out to Australia, how about I just, you know, introduce them to the best surfers and take them around to the best surf spots and just act like we're security guards in the water and made them feel at home and took them to the best cafes and, you know, showed them the best nightlife time around here.
Yeah.
And they just take us to their shows. And I'll tell you, it was insane. And it actually happened. And then it came out for the, I think it was the 2010 Big Day Out tour. And they were headlining the shows. And so I'm like, oh, can I bring some of my mates? So it ended up being about 21 of us. And so we got there and they said, oh, you can't get the tickets until a little bit later. So we went over the pub. Everyone's got rowdy and fucking going off. You know, fucking everyone's doing drugs and going wild.
Yeah, yeah, as you do when you're going to the biggest band in the world's concert with VIP tickets.
Oh, so we get there and on this side on the VIP, like there could have easily been a plug pulled. And like everyone was jumping and going off. After that, I tell you, the next day, the guy that was running the show goes, they're not coming to another fucking show. It's done.
Just barges all.
It's done. They barges. and then it was so radical. And he's like, and then Kirk Hammett and Robert Trujillo goes, we'll be bummed if Jay's not coming to the next show.
So Kirk being the, he's the lead
guitarist
singer.
Guitarist head, yeah.
Yeah.
And the guitarist, lead guitarist
lead
for
guitarist.
Metallica.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck. It was like, oh my God, guys, you just ruined it for us. Not going to happen. And so then I still went along to all the shows after that. Took them to all the best places, took them all the best beach breaks or point breaks everywhere around Australia. And a lot of my friends got to see the best shows of their life. And
What were some of the most memorable moments? Because, I mean, you look. It blows my mind, and we've had many a chats, and I can't wait for Metallica to come out again. You know,
November,
like,
bro, we're on.
We're on. We've just got to, you know, like, for me, though, you, like, wow, what a life. You're traveling with the biggest, and it's second to none. Metallica was and is still the biggest rock band in the world, and you're personally in their private jets, living around them whilst you're on tour, going to their different states in Australia, but then you're having this personal connection. Do you feel that the value of that really outweighs, if you look back now, those contracts of Billabong and, you know, all the hoo-ha, and like you're one out of probably fucking hundreds of thousands that would ever have that opportunity, you know, to experience what you did get to experience. And talk to us about that feeling.
Yeah, man. I tell you, like, it was, for me, it was more rewarding, you know, to see my brothers and my, you know, family and all that go to, you know, to go to the show and show them the best night of their life and walk away just going, fuck, how was that?
So that was more of a wow for you, just knowing that you were able to provide that moment and experience with someone, not so much you traveling with them and, you know, that was great, but it was more for you about seeing everybody else happy.
Yeah, like I've had some of the best ways of my life and traveled to some best locations and surfed some incredible fucking fantastic places in the world, but there was nothing more rewarding than taking my family to see one of the best shows of their life. And, you know, still more to come, mate. I'd say
there's plenty more to come.
Fantastic.
Jay
times.
Phillips isn't dead. That is exactly right. You know, we talk about Jay Phillips is dead and surfing is dead. You've just had such an amazing bright light come out of such darkness. You've also, too, you're a surf coach, so you give back to a lot of the community. Talk to us about where you're at now with that and what you've
been
involved with.
The guys at Hurley, you know, gave me the opportunity to start surfing for their brand in Australia, and thank Bob Hurley for that. And you know, at that point was Mitchell Ross and Blake Levitt and a few of the other guys that were heavy rollers for that brand. And then a few years went on and I became a they wanted me to get involved with the HPC down at which is the high performance center down there at Casarina.
Yep. It's just like an elite training center.
Yeah, it's an elite training center for the next generation coming up through in Australia. And I got in high demand to be there. So I started doing the weeks. Then I started doing 7 days a week. I wasn't seeing my kids grow up.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, like time, you just can't get back. And then, you know, money can come and go, but time you can't get back.
Yeah, I love that.
I just wanted that.
Love that, bro.
Yeah. Andy King got involved at that time and I was a really good friend with him. And he said, just go and have some time out. Come back when you're ready. You know, we want you to come back and everything. And it was like, I was just having so much more fun with my kids and all that at home and pointing them off in the right direction. And I just wanted to be around them. But then Charles was like, stop paying the bills, Jay. So
reality bites again.
Yes. Yeah. So then, yeah, I just started doing some work with surfing services. That was Mark Richardson and Bianca Richardson who took me in. That Bianca is
Joel Parkinson. Yep.
Then this other opportunity came about too. It was called Level Up National Action Sports Academy, which is a school for skateboarding, BMX, and surfing.
So is it a little bit more of an alternative sort of lifestyle education?
Yeah, well, the kids were doing like 3 hours of surfing in the morning, yeah, and then, you know, they do 3 hours of schoolwork and then just do skateboarding all afternoon. It was like, I wish this was around more kids. Well, I wouldn't have wagged school as much. You know, I was like, this is insane. Like,
but this is cool. This is cool. And I just want to touch on this, Jay, because we've talked about this before with other guests we've had on and you know, what we've sort of come to realize is if you tap into something that gives them a worth, a sense of worth, like what you're talking about, you know, like someone that loves skateboarding or BMXing, yeah, or surfing, and incorporate that into their daily education. Wow, how cool.
Yeah, like it was hard because you got a couple of kids that had ADHD, you know, a couple of other kids that, you know, got bipolar and stuff like, yeah, that. So it's like I just dealt with those kids' emotions every day, and it was just great to be able to keep them level and just get them focused on what they wanted to achieve out of the surfing and out of the sport.
Do you find that that's very rewarding when you get a young person that actually wants to sit down and open up to you and share their emotions and talk to you in a way that they probably couldn't others?
Yeah, look, I just wanted to never talk about the bad things all the time to them. I just wanted to talk about good things, what they could achieve each time, you know, and just set goals with them, do the drills with them, and they're just ticking it off every time. And, you know, they just had to bring themselves better each day. Their attitude had to be right up there, being feel great about their life, being around other kids. And so I said, look, if you kids have got a shitty attitude, we're going to go surf the worst break you'll ever surf.
I was just going to bring this up because I reckon this is cool. This is really cool. Either I'll take you to the best surf spot and you'll have the time of your life and maybe the wave of your life, or you're just going to go surf shit.
Yeah.
So what a great analysis of working out, yeah, like your attitude, bringing the attitude. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. So if they had a good attitude, we'll go surf the best spot.
Yeah,
and,
right.
You know, their attitude got better each day. So we're surfing all the best spots on the Gold Coast and people were probably getting annoyed with it, but what are they going to say against me, mate?
You know what? I think, no. That's a really cool way of breaking it down. We've touched on, you know, the things in life that have been pretty amazing for you. And we talked about you saying that Jay Phillips is dead. Surfing's done. You had been filming for so many years, and I'm going to say this because I can, you're not going to like it. Well, you got fucked over for fucking years, and I'm going to say it pretty bluntly because it was pretty shit. You had a video that was coming out years and years and years and years ago that was coming out years ago, that was coming out months ago, that was coming out yesterday, it's coming out next week.
Yeah, fuck COVID.
Fuck everything about it.
Fuck everything.
You know, everybody wanted to take a piece of you. Everybody promised you the world and no one fucking delivered. Then all of a sudden, someone come into your life, a young fella with some wonderful talent, And there is a movie that has just been released about your life, which is mind-blowing. It sends tingles sort of down my spine and raises the hair on my arms every time I watch it. And I think I can't wait for everybody just to capture, you know, this. Even if you don't know who Jay is, the powerfulness of this short movie is phenomenal. And it is called Jay Phillips Isn't Dead.
Yeah, that's right. The name's pretty daunting, but I just went through those times of just, you know, as I said earlier, going to that trade show in America and just going, you know, Jay Phillips is dead here. He's dead in the world of surfing. And when I teamed up with Joe Bailey and Wade Crichton, those guys were young. They were, you know, passionate about their work, and they just saw this story in my life that had a little different than others and that surf. And, you know, so I was fortunate enough to have these two work on a story that I'm hoping to show you guys out there of what it's all about. But yeah, the name Jay Phillips Isn't Dead. Yeah, Charles was going, blown away about it, going, oh, I don't know if it should be called Jay Phillips Isn't Dead. Because over COVID, it could have been Jay Phillips Is Dead Now. Didn't get released.
And the movie didn't get the release.
Yeah.
It's still coming out tomorrow.
Yeah, it's still coming out. It's still 99% done. Because we showed it at a festival here in Coolangatta, and it was... And I didn't know how it was going to react to people, because a lot of people have gone through that kind of situation in their life. But the response from everyone was quite overwhelming. Because in the movie, there isn't much surfing. It is quite intense.
Very emotional. Very, very emotional. It's like we've touched on here, you know, it talks about your upbringing. It talks about the loss of your dad and how traumatic that was for you, and living, you know, with that without ever being able to deal with your true emotions. And you've got the likes of, like I said, Kelly Slater, Mick Fanning, Joel Parkinson, Dean Morrison. You've got Metallica's in there. You know, you've got the greatest people that you could ask for that are giving testimonies through this wonderful short film about you and what a wonderful man that you are. That's awesome.
Yeah, I want to give thanks to those guys that put their time out to help, you know, get some comments from them about my life. So it's pretty hard. I'd turn up and I'd have to walk away and then come back and they said, yeah, we're done.
Like they were just talking behind your back sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So, but as I was saying, it is intense. It's quite emotional and there's a good feeling at the end. But, yeah, we're going to add some more surfing to it. And it's to a really good song from the Drones. It's called River of Tears.
Right.
It's a real ripper song. And, I want to say thanks to Joey Bailey and Wade Crichton. He is the brains of the whole film, Wade Crichton.
Without Jay Phillips being alive, the film would never, ever exist. So,
yeah, I know. It's taken a long time.
You know, I know he's, once again, you giving praise to everybody else, as you do, but I'm going to just stand up and say, mate, without you, it didn't fucking happen. So, you know, credit to you, brother. You know, you're a dad. You've got four beautiful children, almost two adults. You're putting in so much time. You love the kids. You love giving every opportunity to them in the water, the ocean. You teach them so much. How is life being a dad and a husband and having your own family and you know, them knowing who dad is and why, you know, dad sees life the way he does?
Yeah, as you know, being a parent is quite hard. You know, you always want to provide with food on the table. You know, you want to have a roof over their head and how to teach them, you know, the way of life a little bit better than the way you had it.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to show them more of me and less of me, just to be able to be around them, point them off into a good direction in their life.
Yeah.
You know, I want them to be a surfer. It's up to them in the end if they want to be whoever they want to be, you know, but I just think surfing it's free, the ocean's free, you know, and I still want to give thanks to Sideways and Lincoln and Lear. They've given me the opportunity to push their brand into a better direction.
Sideways Surf, is that who you're talking about?
Yeah, Sideways Surf, yeah. Well, yeah,
wow.
We're family now.
While we're on the subject, I'm going to say a big shout out to Sideways Surf, who, you know, thank you to the team there and Lincoln and his wonderful wife. They have, you know, they are a family business, very successful. And, you know, credit where credit's due. Without them, you know, we'd be struggling because it doesn't come for free providing these podcasts. They do cost money. We do run a professional outfit. And the Sideways Surf team has been amazing in giving us 12 months of relief and support. So, yes, we are family and we are grateful. Yeah. And, you know, we can continue to bring many, many seasons to you wonderful people out there. Look, they've already dropped the ads in there. We no need to give them any more plugs. Jay, we always leave the Clinks interviews with something powerful from each guest. Now, whether it's a sentence, a paragraph, or just something that, you know, resonates with you, if you could talk to somebody who has experienced what you've gone through at a young age, that's lost, that's looking for something, what advice would you give to that young Jay Phillips today?
Look, don't give up hope. You know, if you set your dreams and live those goals that you want to live, and, you know, like, because, you know, yesterday's history, tomorrow's a mystery. And, you know, if you're a father, a young father, you know, you just remember, just money comes and goes. You don't get that time back with your kids.
Do what That's you really to. Powerful, huh?
Yeah, man, just do what you have to do to be able to live to a better day each day.
Jay Phillips, I am honoured to, one, have you on here, two, for you to share your story on the Clink. I do think that it is a very powerful story of redemption, because you could have, in every way, shape or form, taken many other roads that wouldn't have you here today. And as you said clearly, you know, there were times there in your young years, you were in dark times, you didn't want to be here. Thank God you are. I think the community, the surfing community, the people you help, your beautiful children, your wonderful wife, me, your brother-in-law, I love you. We all love you.
Love you too, mate,
thank you so much for what you do.
Thanks for having me.
And giving back. And look, guys, Google Jay Phillips if you don't know. If you get to the Gold Coast, reach out to him or reach out to me if you want to learn to surf. Jay also does private lessons. So, guys, please make sure that you message me or email me or look at Jay Phillips on Instagram. Drop him a message. You have a wonderful time being taught how to surf by one of the world's best. And, God, he's got some great stories, and you get in the water and you'll have a hell of a time. Jay, thank you so much, mate, for your time tonight.
Thanks for having me, mate. Love you.
You too, brother. Thank you.
Jay Phillips isn't dead.
For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable.
That's right.
For the record, you ain't trying to grow, then it's done for you.
That's right.
For the record, lab on me going all the way.
All the way.
For the record, ain't trying to link, no time to waste.
Stop calling.
For the record. For the record. Yeah. For the record. For the record. For the record. For the record.